Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, and thank you for joining us today. It is Friday, the 29th day of April, 2011. Webster Griffin Tarpley to talk about a host of issues, the economy, the plunging dollar, the royal wedding, a spectacle of the Imperium with the fawning serfs begging for their slavery. We'll get into the whole birth certificate hubbub becoming an overall distraction. And I also want to break down some of what's going on with these terrible tornadoes that have been going on the last few weeks. The latest crop raging through the South, focusing in on Alabama, killing over 300 people. And of course, we will always use a news item, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the tragic, to illustrate things. So I want to talk a little bit after the break about terror and tornadoes. You got a better chance of being killed statistically here in the U.S. by a honeybee. Over 100 deaths a year, over 100 wasp deaths, another flying, stinging insect deaths. If you add them all up together, it's over 300 a year. We've pulled up those statistics. You can just search number of wasp deaths, U.S. a year, number of honeybee deaths. It's in the hundreds. It varies year to year, but it's generally in the hundreds. Just like shark attacks seem to be below 10 a year in North America, only two or three deaths a year worldwide from sharks, hundreds of attacks a year, but only a few deaths every year. Generally, they think you're a seal when you're in your wetsuit on your surfboard. They think you're a big, giant, juicy seal. They think they've hit the mother lode. Great white grabs you, rarely eats you, tastes you, and says this isn't a fat, juicy seal, and lets you go. But by then, your leg's bitten off at the hip, and you bleed to death off the coast of California or Australia before they get you to shore. But there are a few sharks that like to actually eat you. The mako and the tiger will actually grab you and take you to the bottom and have a snack. But see, I'm digressing. That's the problem with factoids and data. My mind goes to one area and then I digress. The issue I'm trying to get at here is automobiles kill on average 300 plus thousand a year just in the U.S. alone. Of course, this is over the entire world. It's in the millions. But we're not shaking with fear of it. Tornadoes kill on average hundreds and hundreds of people every year in the U.S. This is one of the worst on record, 300 in just the last couple days. And they're finding more dead bodies. Tsunamis killed hundreds of thousands in 2005. It's now up to 50,000 dead or missing in Japan with a tsunami and earthquake. But there is a irrational fear, a hyperventilating fear of firearms, of terrorists, of men with turbans and big beards. It's fun to get into the fear. I heard local talk show hosts this morning literally tremulating in their voices and in abject terror of concealed carry holders. And then that the Texas Homeland Security Committee's passed it into the full House to have open carry. And by the way, that's not illegal. This is all a trick. Concealed is illegal under common law. And then under the Second Amendment, it's always been illegal to hide arms because criminals hide arms. Open bearing of arms is only illegal in a few globalist cities like New York and Chicago. Though you try walking down the street in Texas, I mean, they even stop you now if you're walking across from your farmhouse to your 40 acres across the street in the middle of nowhere. I'll pull over. What are you doing with that shotgun? I've got a shotgun. I'm walking around with it. I don't know. I'm going to go shoot some Tweety birds. Go shoot some doves, quail, whatever. I'm going to fry them up in a skillet. What are you doing? Well, just making sure, because it's a gun, and I've been taught to be real scared of it, because I watch TV at night with drama shows based in New York, and though I'm in East Texas, I just believe in television. I can't differentiate reality from fiction. Of course, they don't know. That's why they do.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
It is Friday, the 29th day of April, 2011. We're going to have a completely jam-packed broadcast today. Later in the hour, I'm going to open the phones up on a host of issues. Would love to hear from you once I have a chance to go over some of the most important news and give you my take on it. We have Webster Griffin Tarpley joining us in studio today, a frequent guest and contributor, a historian and economist, and then Dr. Bob Bowman later in studio, the former director of the Star Wars program, also a colonel in the U.S. Army and a fighter bomber pilot in Vietnam. He'll be here to talk about Fukushima. He's a nuclear physicist and a lot more. Now, continuing here with the news, I want to get into the tragic tornadoes that are intensifying as the cold air continues to blow in and hit the hot air. And this has happened for as long as people have lived in North America. And that's why you see all the old farmhouses have the storm shelter in them. Al Gore and others are running around saying, see, this is caused by climate change. Well, that's an oxymoron. There's always climate change. There's always tsunamis and earthquakes and meteors and tornadoes and typhoons. It's always happening. It's always happening. You can go back and read about hurricanes that hit New Orleans 300 years ago and killed thousands of people. You can read about floods in the 1920s that killed tens of thousands of people. You can read about tornadoes that killed hundreds and hundreds of people per city. But they know the public doesn't have a lot of common sense background or knowledge, at least some of the public, so they hype this every time it happens. And they also say tornadoes are increasing in frequency. Well, until just 60 so years ago, they couldn't even pick them up on radar. Radar didn't exist. And in the last few decades, they've developed Doppler systems that are very specific. You can even pick up a group of blackbirds flying around above your house. You know, flocks of geese show up on these things. So now they know when little tornadoes touch down or little tornadoes form. So obviously there's more tornadoes statistically because they now understand what's going on. Just like there's more species that have been discovered. Those species, thousands being discovered a year, thousands. Bugs, insects, birds, mammals. Those species were already there. You know, when they discover something, it doesn't make it come into existence. We just discover it's there. It's kind of like if there's a strawberry plant growing in the woods behind your house and you go out and find it, when you see the strawberry plant, it didn't make it come into existence. You know, the ancients, the Greeks and others thought that maggots spontaneously came out of meat. They thought that maggots spontaneously came out of meat. They just thought that if meat laid out for a week in the sun, that then magically, spontaneously, these maggots appeared. No, flies laid eggs that then hatched out and were maggots. And then they eat the meat. And then they are the larval form of a fly. And then more flies are made and they find more rotten things to lay their eggs in. Okay, I assure you, it's not a conspiracy theory that flies are laying eggs in that meat. One time I had an employee who would leave the bathroom window open at the old office, and we had all these flies flying around. And he would go around and say, well, we got flies because people are leaving trash for a day or two in the trash can. And I said, no. I said, you're leaving the window open. There's not a screen in that bathroom, and flies are coming in here through the window. They're not spontaneously being generated out of the trash can. And he said, no, they are. And I said, you will not leave that window open when you go in the bathroom. It's and even intelligent people have these blind spots. We all have blind spots. But if you want to understand the world and you understand how the globalists operate, more and more studying them, I realize they understand that we're all basically little individuals who have limited perspective, limited view. Even if you're a 180 IQ, you can't see over the societal horizon until you've studied history and trends and how they operate. That's why those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Versus if you know history, you can understand the present and the future. And so the globalists, everything they do is about facades, projections. They know how the individual perceives things. And so they say, man, it's a hot summer. See, pay me a tax and I'll fix it. Man, we're having a global warming. Then it comes out for 15 years. It's been warming only in specific small areas of the world in microclimates. But overall, in the last 15 years, it's been cooling if you take all the numbers and average them together. See, they use little specific things cut out to say, wow, we're having violent weather. They're having the hottest temperature they ever had in this area of Russia. Well, they're also in many other areas having the coldest temperatures ever recorded. See, they're only taking little snapshots and saying, look at what's happened in Alabama. Why, we've got hundreds of people dead. And yes, if you've been hurt or you've had your home destroyed or you've had a family member killed, it is a great tragedy. It's terrible. But when you look in the sum aggregate breakdown, this stuff is always going on in different regions of the world. It's kind of like it's a depression if you're out of work and homeless, but if the other guy down the street's doing great, it's not a depression for him. See, it's all perspective and where you are looking at something. It's like if you're in front of a building looking at the facade and somebody calls you on the cell phone and says, wow, you ought to see these gargoyles. You're like, I don't see gargoyles. And then you walk around the other side of the building and they've got gargoyles up. And I know I'm obsessing on this point. I've got a lot of news to cover ahead of our guests joining us. It's just that this morning the Department of Homeland Security Committee in the state of Texas passed a open carry bill into the full House. It's not law yet. It's got to go through the House and then the Texas Senate. And I heard local radio scanning the channels, multiple talk show hosts hyperventilating in fear that it'll be Wild West, mass death, mass killing. Oh, my gosh, why are they doing this? And I heard the effeminate really fetish of groveling and saying, I only want officers to be armed. I want to feel safe. Well, first off, it's never been illegal, except in a few controlled globalist cities like New York and Chicago, to have open carry. It's a trick of government to say you can have a concealed carry because that's the only area government has a right to give you a license for something that would be illegal because under common law and under the Bill of Rights and Constitution, Declaration of Independence, a concealed weapon going back to common law 1,000 years ago in Europe, it was illegal to carry a sword or dagger hidden. Thieves, criminals, murderers don't want you to know you have a weapon. Why do you wave at someone when they're a friend? Why do you wave? Why do you shake hands? Because you meet a traveler on the road, they wave, hi, the old European gesture, hi. Every other culture did it. Humans are all the same. And then when you meet them, you generally, in the ancient handshake, with both hands reach out and grasp each other's hands. The more modern is one hand. It's, I don't have a weapon. And if they caught you in every European culture, and it was the same in Asian cultures, if they caught you with a concealed dagger or a concealed weapon, generally you got hung by the neck until dead. You see, I don't need a license in Texas to wear a firearm on my side. I don't need a license to walk down Main Street with a shotgun or with an AR-15 and to hear the manifest ignorance. Now, I am for people openly carrying because it breaks the taboo. We go back to 1930s Texas, 1930s Vermont, 1930s Arizona, before they started changing it. And I remember just 20 years ago, you saw guns and gun racks everywhere. They now pull you over in rural areas in Texas if you've got a 30-odd six in your back window. And I just scratch my head and I say, why? Why are even cops who know it's not illegal, why are they pulling you over? And I've talked to family and others who have been out at our home place. And they're walking from the farmhouse over to the field, and the cops see you with a shotgun. They pull over and ask, what are you doing? In America, in rural areas, 10 miles from a little town, there's nobody around, and you've got a shotgun, so the cops pull over and ask, what are you doing with a shotgun? What do you think I'm doing with a shotgun? I'm walking around out here, shooting at stuff, peddling around. You see, it's all about being minded and being taught you're a little serf, because serfs and slaves couldn't have weapons. We're going back to that. And they hate it that people are going to rallies with guns on their sides all over the country. They hate it. And then all the time people call the cops, and the cops go, it's legal. It's legal. So what they're saying is, since you're a CHL and we tricked you to come get a licensure from us, a letter of marque to do something that would be illegal to conceal, now we're going to say under the conceal, you're allowed to show it. Because see, hundreds and hundreds of people, I was looking at the numbers this morning in Texas, have been given misdemeanors and gotten in trouble. Because, oh my gosh, if you leave your fanny pack unzipped and they see the handle of the gun or your jacket flaps and they see it, then all these ninnies start urinating on themselves, literally, and running and panicking. I see a slave with a gun. I see a fellow slave with a gun. But I want to tell these panicking talk show hosts something. These panicking, gelded, castrated men. Kennesaw, Georgia, Florida, you've got all the statistics. Generally, it's about 23% within 1 year of a concealed carry, crime drops. Home invasions, robberies, carjackings, over 20%. Some states, it's even higher. Kennesaw, Georgia, was 87%. That's state's own numbers. Because criminals are scared to mug a woman if she's got a fanny pack. You know, criminals will tell you, they look at a jogging woman, does she have a fanny pack? Is there a little 25 in there? You see? They're scared. Crime goes down, you domesticated idiots that are scared of seeing a fellow citizen with a firearm, but go into creamy-eyed delight to see a government person with a gun. We are the government in America. We built this country. It's about owning guns, you coward! One life, and I am not going to be an ignorant slave. I'm not going to be ruled over by lesser men. I am not your property, New World Order. And I want you to get it through your head that the spirit of 1776 is rising. Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're here back Sundays 4 to 6 p.m. You have found it, ladies and gentlemen, the front lines of the info war, the tip of the spear in the awakening process of free humanity. Choose a side. Join the team that loves liberty and freedom and honor, and come in for the big win. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you a smattering of some of what's coming up in the next segment. I got Tarpley popping in as well a little bit later in the hour into the next hour. But I started digressing off into this domestication process and how people are scared of things they shouldn't be because the media teaches them how through Pavlovian conditioning and peer pressure that it's fun to get scared of the Muslim terrorist, though the honeybee is much more deadly statistically. It's fun to get scared of the great white shark, even though they kill maybe 3 people a year worldwide. It's fun to get scared of things that don't matter, but then meanwhile, tornadoes just kill 300 people in one day. You know, we've got to have the TSA stick the hands down the pants, because somebody might go on here and might blow up an airplane. And so we've got to do it to 6-year-olds. We've got to do it to pop stars. We've got to do it to Miss America. Our hands are going in your pants. And if you don't want our hands down your pants, go through the scanner. Oh, but by the way, we put you through the scanner, we also go hands down the pants. Oh, that's been announced. That's what they do. They do both. They admit they want to do all of it to everybody. Everyone scanned, everyone hand down the pants. They're breaking your will to start doing forced inoculations and blood draws, which are already starting all over the country. Public schools everywhere last year got caught, and the year before that, giving little elementary kids that are too confused to tell their parents the flu shots illegally when the parents said don't do it. That's on record. They take your baby's blood at birth for almost 40 years in every Western nation through a global government system already in place. They spy on your cell phones by federal law for a decade. They dial in. They listen to you. They do what they want. They're dirtbag crooks building armies of servile, minimum wage, 80 IQ, low-grade morons who will do whatever they're told. I read the TSA blog where the TSA is in there commenting, and they're in there talking to each other. Well, they just know we're keeping them safe, and it's not molestation to stick our hands down their pants. And now we've got a new report up on PrisonPlanet.com. Very, very important article. Pop culture icon Rihanna put through TSA naked body scanner in show of power. And there was paparazzi taking photos. They all knew who she was. Doesn't matter. We're going to get those naked photos of you. And they bossed her around and made her go through it all. But, oh, everybody has to, see, unless you're a high-level member of Congress or a globalist. Of course, they all just go get on private jets anyways. You ever flown privately? I have a few times when people pick me up in private jets, and you just walk into a nice facility with normally they'll have a area that looks like the inside of a 7-Eleven with drinks and snacks, and sometimes you sign a clipboard, other times you just walk right on the tarmac. And the pilots just get your license, not even all the time, put a record on that you flew, and that's it. That's how the globalists travel, ladies and gentlemen. That's how the elite travel. Okay, they don't go through the airports like everybody else. This is training. And then the TSA people are going, well, if you don't like it, take a bus. Oh, really? You're already taking over the bus terminals and the train stations. The point is they're just closing the tourniquet in with this irrational fear of terrorists. I mean, are they going to put a TSA agent with a butterfly net to capture bees on every street corner? Because potentially bees could bite somebody. In fact, how about every 5 feet we need a TSA agent to stop bees killing people? Or how about a TSA agent every 5 feet to stop automobile accidents that kill 300 plus thousand people a year here in the U.S.? In fact, guys, pull up statistics. A number of automobile fatalities globally. I know it's over 1 million every year. Let's just ban cars then. 1 million people dying from it. Again, it's the same thing with the Second Amendment. They know more guns means less crime. In all the areas where the globalists run things, there are no guns. They're the crime capitals. They know. But they've got all these people shaking in fear of other citizens having firearms. It's all irrational, and I've had enough of it. I'm sick of it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out.
All right, my friends, we are back live, and in studio with us is Webster Griffin Tarpley. We're going to him here in just a few minutes, but let me go over a smattering of some of the other important news that we have here in front of us today. The reason I went over the tornadoes and talked about the honeybees killing more people than terrorists every year is because we need to understand that A, the government can't protect us, B, won't protect us, and has no intention of protecting us. It's all about a psychological idea that we're children and that we've got to be taken care of by these people, and that somehow, I mean, I see Rick Perry begging the feds for help with the wildfires, and certainly the Army, the military, the federal government does have more resources per capita than Texas. Why? Why have we been emasculated? Why have we had our tax money taken and then a paltry amount of assistance sent back instead of keeping most of our money here and having local control? You see, that's the issue. You don't give a man fish, you teach a man how to fish. Well, the globalists don't want you knowing how to fish. And they don't want you having currency and credit. They want you economically disheveled so that you are beholden to them. You go back hundreds of years to sharecroppers. Economically, many historians wrote that and studied that they were worse off than black slaves here in the U.S. because the slave was supposedly property. You wanted to keep them alive. Sharecroppers died of malnutrition many times in bad years. And they had to sign a contract to buy their clothes, their sugar, their flour, everything from the company store. You've heard the song, I owe my soul to the company store. When the blacks got supposedly free after the Civil War, many of them just became the lowest rung of the sharecroppers. Most Americans have ancestors who came over here as white slaves. Oh, it was only a 7-year indentured servitude, but you generally never got off of the plantation. But, oh, don't worry, poor whites still enjoyed looking down on blacks. It's all about a snobbery. Oh, at least I get to look down on somebody. And that's why only around 2% of whites in the colonies, then later in the North and the South, actually owned slaves. But over 90% in the surveys that were done at the time of poor whites supported it early on until the movement to abolish it, the abolitionists, because they got to look down on somebody. And it wouldn't even matter if the black slave going and picking something up in town for the master was even healthier and had a little bit more fat on their belly than the sharecropper wearing rags. He could still order the black around. And again, this is all what you see at the country clubs and what you see in cliques in schools. Humans love tribal hierarchies, and the TSA and the government system and the corporate system gives them all these little power-tripping hierarchies to feed on people and to perch on top of them and control them. Now, that's my point. I don't want to be a domesticated slave. I want to honor creativity, science, trailblazing, honor, courage, exploration. This country had most of the patents, the greatest wealth, the greatest minds. The whole world marveled 200 years ago, 100 years ago, because the rock stars were not drug-addled rock stars. They weren't men putting basketballs in hoops. They weren't soccer players. That was a thing for youngsters. No. They admired scientists and trailblazers and inventors and people of honor who would not bend to the will of a king when ordered to do something, even if it meant they got their head chopped off. That was the Renaissance. That is the Enlightenment. That is what I'm about. Not about all of this pop garbage. The globalists feed you this because they understand what's happening. They're all obsessed with literature and art and science and are constantly at conferences with top scientists charting the future and system programming and system analysis. While they laugh at you, you know, Karl Rove a few months ago was in a restaurant and I heard him during the snickering and giggling right behind me until I couldn't stand it and got up and said, I'm not eating in the same restaurant with a Hitler, and left. And he was giggling and laughing at how people were watching the Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl Sunday. I did my show and then left and took the guys out to eat. And I heard him making fun of the little people watching their football. I heard that snickering behind me. Oh, but meanwhile, he'll go to an NFL game with George W. Bush, and he likes the team to make you think he's one of you. No, he's not one of you. Okay? He's studying Machiavellian propaganda systems of the 21st century. Okay, I'm ranting. It's just, it's all off the charts. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, I got off into a Second Amendment rant. The collectivist hate it. The domesticators hate it. That all over the country they've passed concealed carry, which itself takes a right and turns it into a privilege. Legal to carry a gun openly in almost every state. It's the concealed under ancient common law that's illegal. That's how they trick you to go into the licensure. But the point is, it still has illustrated the 20%+ crime drop in every state within 1 year where it's implemented because criminals are scared. They're not going to knock off, you know, hit the woman on the head or rape her at the park if she's got a gun. Because they know that woman could have a gun in that fanny pack. Even if you don't want a gun, women, you should wear one when you're jogging. They know that. They understand that. And it's the same thing with the globalists. They hate the precedent of you defending yourself. They hate the precedent of armed people everywhere and guns being worn openly because they've got this illusion with the general public that can't differentiate reality from fiction with every major cop drama based in D.C., New York, or Chicago, Almost every show and every episode, I just spot check TV, and every time I turn on a cop show, it's the same thing. They pull the guy over. They're in his apartment. He's always some immoral person committing some horrible crime, and he has a gun, and they say, oop, don't have a license for this. You're going to prison, buddy. And the mind control is, here in Texas, a carpet cleaner comes to your house, the plumber, they're not from Texas or a state that, you know, that isn't totally domesticated. They see the gun case. They call the police. They hate it that people everywhere are going, no, I'm wearing this openly. See, I'm not your slave. I'm wearing my sword openly. I'm a free man. You understand that? And this was caught on tape, reportedly, by the Washington Post. They did write about it in the Washington Post. They have not released the audio. But Obama working under the radar to sneak attack Second Amendment, big news. They're using regulations to shut down manufacturers, importation, and ordering gun shops only sell one gun outside of law. Very dangerous precedent, like ordering plants, coal power plants, to be shut down without a law. Just, well, we got men in suits, and we got guns behind them. Do what we say. Political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. That's our checkmate. They just do what they want. According to little notice quote from the Washington Post earlier this month, which attracted virtually no media attention, President Obama told gun control advocate Sarah Brady that his administration is working under the radar to sneak attack the Second Amendment rights of American citizens. And during the March 30th meeting between Jim and Sarah Brady at the White House, Secretary Jay Carney, at which Obama dropped in, the president reportedly told Brady, I just want you to know that we are working on it, gun control. We have to go through a few processes, but under the radar, just like he's back with amnesty. Remember 4 years ago, Bush had an amnesty plan. They wouldn't let the public see it. And they said, don't worry, though, it's on amnesty. And then Senator Sessions leaked it. They tried to censure him for it. Since when do we have secret legislation? And it was total amnesty, including for felons. They just signed a form promising to be nice in the future. So, there you have it. And then his article goes through the stealth gun grab, how they're coming after your guns. And as I told you a year ago, I could see them getting it ready. Oh, Mexico is collapsing because of guns from America. Oh, total gun ban, total crime. Turns out over 90% are being sold by the military. They're fully auto, hand grenades, grenade launchers, German and U.S. military arms from U.S. and German sales and support to Mexico, U.S. support, aid, military aid. And it turns out for years they've been ordering guns to be allowed to be shipped to Mexico that are going to the drug cartels. That's CBS News. That's old news. The point is, this is a government false flag against the Second Amendment. Get this article out to everybody. Obama working under the radar to sneak attack the Second Amendment. Okay, continuing, another key article that I think is DrudgeReport.com fodder, but he's been linking to us so much in the last week, who knows if he will. Regardless, let's get this out to everybody. Pop culture icon Rihanna put through TSA naked body scanner in show of power. Random scans? Not when there's an attractive megastar in the security line. So that's another important article. Rand Paul responding to Donald Trump and his latest geekery. Next, it'll be biting the heads off of chickens in a F-bomb laced tirade in Las Vegas last night to try to get attention and to make conservatives look bad. Rand Paul demands to see original long-form certificate of Trump's Republican credentials. Turns out he's a seedy New York Democratic banker, Wall Street, penny stock, pro grabbing people's private property, eminent domain, dirtball. But people love to think some magic man on a white horse is going to save them. So knowing Republicans, if they like George Bush, they should really love Donald Trump. And if Republicans like George Bush, they should love Obama. It's the same policies, just different window dressing. Continuing with articles up on PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com, Tony Cartolucci has a great article. Obama's birth certificate, not the issue. I'm going to talk about that later. Is birth or circus a White House political ploy? Paul Joseph Watson, PrisonPlanet.com. That's just some of the news we've got at that front. They're calling this a big victory for Obama with his latest long form. He may have been born in Hawaii. The point is they've been covering something up for 2 years, and that birth certificate has been altered, probably on purpose to keep it on this debate instead of his real record, which they don't want people to look at. Meanwhile, Obama's approval rating remains at all-time low for second week in a row, says Gallup, despite the latest stunt. Also, Washington Times reports birth certificate isn't Obama's only secret. The White House is still saying we're not going to release his college, any of the rest of it. Big cover-ups going on that front. That is just some of what we're going to be discussing. And the economic news today with economist Webster Tarpley, also historian. Economic growth slow as inflation measures spikes up. That is just some of what we're going to be breaking down. But it's funny. Tarpley got here about 12 minutes ago or so during the break. And I said, Tarpley, what do you want to talk about today? And he said, first, I want to... It's great to have him here in studio with us. He said, first, I want to talk about this spectacle, the royal wedding. And I said, absolutely. That was my first issue. And I said, what do we want to talk about second? Well, the birth certificate. Exactly as I, of the same mind. And then we'll get into the economy and Libya and Fukushima and all of it with him for the full next hour. Then Dr. Bob Bowman will be in studio with us. And Tarpley's here to be interviewed for a documentary film on the Tea Party and how they've co-opted the left with Obama, now the right with the co-opted Tea Party that they claim was founded by Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck when it was founded almost 4 years ago by 9/11 Truth and then picked up by Ron Paul 3.5 years ago. And some media does admit the truth of that, but it's interesting to understand how the globalists are trying to control the left-right populist awakening that's happening. So we'll cover that full spectrum. But I put out a video 2 days ago that's had over 200,000 views and has been picked up by the London Telegraph and others. Basically, they're raising the alarm like body snatchers, hissing at me that I'm not a royalist. That I dare say the spirit of America is about not being entitled, these hereditary kings, these German usurpers of England. No, I'm not saying Germans are bad folks. I'm part German. The point is they are usurpers. I'm not over in Germany, you know, claiming I'm the king there, you know, from Texas. And people are like, well, why are you covering the royal wedding? It's pop. It's a diversion. Yes, we're covering it and illustrating that they create these Bernaysian sycophantic events like they're celebrities and they have all the celebrities there bowing and kowtowing to create the illusion this is something wonderful and valuable while saying, oh, they're ceremonial. They have no power, when it's the opposite. And I see Canadians, British, other Commonwealth holdings in denial that she declares war. That she can have whole tribes kicked off islands for U.S. military bases. That when I was in London last, they were announcing, as I did a tour bus, well, the Queen has closed these roads today. She does that to let us know she owns them and that she owns half the country and doesn't allow billboards nationally and shuts the Thames occasionally to exercise power. And Canada, 3 times in the last year, she suspended Parliament through her Governor General. And folks say, oh, that's just titular. That's just vestigial. That's just ceremonial. That's just blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. I've read the Governor General agreements, but we have a historian, an expert who has a doctorate in the whole Venetian system into the British Empire on this specific subject. So for all of you Brits and others who are in denial about this, here is the Times of London. Islanders accuse Queen of illegal eviction. And they go on and admit 6 years ago in Diego Garcia kicking the giant native population off so that it could be a secretive B-52 reloading weapons base to menace the Middle East. I mean, here's the Times of London. Stop living in denial. Okay? Stop it. Okay? They have the Parliament with its two houses, the House of Lords and the Parliament, and then they've got the Queen. And she, her Queen's speech sets the agenda. They're the ones that want the eugenics on record. They had the Royal Population Commission in 49 that was cited as U.S. policy in State Department Memorandum 273. Well, I'm ranting. Webster, the rest of this segment, the next segment, let's focus on the royal wedding, break it down, the true power, what the spectacle is all about. Webster, Griffin, Tarpley, good to have you here.
Thank you very much, Alex, and thank you for your spirit, right, the righteous indignation against this monstrosity. Certainly, if you look at what these American networks have done with this event, I think this is really a revolting spectacle. Once Queen Elizabeth was asked about what her ideology was, and her answer was, we are older than capitalism and socialism. And it's true, because what she represents is feudalism. This is a feudal or neo-feudal degenerate that heads up this family. Now, she's not an absolute monarch. This is an oligarchical monarchy. But the power of the monarch within the oligarchy is very considerable, as you've been...
Well, it's also, they're all intermarried. It's hereditary. It's a gang. It's, right. It's like the La Cosa Nostra.
Maybe we just give some examples. I think if you wanted to look at this, do a short summary. You could organize it around themes like insanity, in other words, mental degeneracy, which they have very, very heavily, and then support for genocide.
Because inbreeding, even with the Egyptians, you know, a lot of their folks only lived at age five or so. I mean, inbreeding causes...
It says Dieu mon droit, and Dieu mon droit means incest is fine as long as you keep it in the family. George III was stark-raving mad, the tyrant. Queen Victoria, for the last 40 years of her life, was a recluse who ran a death cult around her dead husband, Prince Albert, and she had seers, occultists, apparitionists, Ouija boards...
Same thing with Tony Blair. That's where this starts.
Well, poor Tony, one of the things we have today is that this was a hard right turn by the monarchy today, because neither of the two Labor Party guys, not Tony Blair and not Gordon Brown, were invited today. So this is really one of the most important political...
Well, Webster, I'm relishing this. Stay there. We'll be right back to break down this disgusting spectacle. Webster, you've got the floor. Start breaking down why this royal wedding is so abhorrent. People say, well, just ignore it if it's bad. No, this is how they're selling themselves as a propaganda ploy to the world.
It's an exercise in brainwashing the American people on a pretty vast scale. Again, George III was stark raving mad. There was even a movie about that some years ago. Victoria spent 40 years of her life as a recluse, practically never going outside. She lived in Balmoral Castle. Some years ago, the prescription records of the local pharmacy were found. She was an opium addict in the form of laudanum, which was a tincture, a solution of opium in alcohol that they would use. And she was known as Mrs. John Brown because she spent all of her time with this Scottish, rustic, right, who lived there. And he basically had the adjoining bedroom. So that was Mrs. John Brown. Other examples would be, you look at Prince Philip, right? He wants to come back reincarnated as a deadly virus to kill people and solve the problem of overpopulation in the world. I mean, that statement goes beyond anything Hitler ever said in public, right? That you want to kill people for the purpose of lowering the population. Prince Charles, right? The father of the groom. What's with him? He says he talks to plants. All right, fine. Anybody can talk to plants. But then he added, and they answer me. So when the plants start answering you, then you know that you're pretty much in trouble.
But we know medically that inbreeding, it doesn't just cause deformities. It always causes insanity, megalomania. And here is an inbred group of megalomaniacs in these 17th century commander outfits festooned with medals, with women all over the world buying teacups and throwing flowers at them. This is like groveling at the feet of a cesspit. It's like bathing in maggot leavings.
Yes. Well said. The great, great, great uncle of the pair, right, the couple who got married today, was Prince Albert Victor Edward, known as Prince Eddie. And according to most historians, he is the main suspect of being Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
And not that he was necessarily insane to start with.
Well, syphilis. Syphilitic.
Syphilis, and he probably died of syphilis.
Ripping scrofula.
Okay. Apart from this, now the insanity is one thing, but then this affinity for Nazism and the affinity for genocide. Now the key guy, of course, is King Edward VIII, who was a close personal friend of Hitler. This is about 1936, right? He was forced out very soon.
When the war started, he had to run out through Portugal. He was busy groveling at Hitler's feet.
He was a volunteer to Hitler to become the viceroy of a Nazi puppet state in Great Britain if Hitler had conquered the British Isles, he would have come forward and say, make me, the, in effect, the king.
He'd be the British equivalent of a Vichy.
Of Marshal Pétain. He would have been the Marshal Pétain, except he would have said, I'm a member of the royal family. And when you think about it, that would have meant that Nazism would have come into Canada and into Australia and into New Zealand because of the way the British...
And it would have gotten the British intelligence network. Hitler would have won at that point.
Hitler would have gotten a foothold in the North American continent.
No, Hitler linked up with the British Empire would have been unstoppable. But don't you agree?
Yes. Well, it would have been a very grave thing. But it would have meant that a lot of institutions in the empire, a lot of United Empire loyalists would have immediately said, well, if the king is Edward and he's supporting Hitler, then we have to support Hitler, too. So that's very...
Because Hitler was a rock star at that time.
The entire history of this British oligarchy, I mean, it's not just...
Well, let's continue. Back in 1 minute, let's continue, Webster, because I want to finish up with some of the history, then get to this current spectacle. They have to hide most of the royals because they're so mentally ill and deformed. They trot out the few that can actually talk.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Doctor of History, economist, Webster Griffin Tarpley is our guest for the rest of the hour. Then Dr. Bob Bowman's coming in. I'm tempted for a segment or two to have these two in here together. That'd be a very interesting event. The last time we had that was when they were on C-SPAN at my 9/11 event in 2006 that had such a big effect. Webster, you were going through some of the history of these people we worship in this short segment. When we come back, I want to look at the real power they wield, suspending parliaments, kicking natives off islands, funding genocide, a really nasty lot. But she's such a sweet old lady.
Yeah, the history of it, of course, is something quite different. If you wanted to focus on one person in the entire thousand-year history of the British monarchy, right, going back to William the Conqueror, in 1066, it would probably be King Edward VII. Now, he was king, formally speaking, pretty much in the first decade of the 20th century. So about 100 years ago, he died. So he'd been in power from about 1900 to 1909 or 1910. However, since Victoria had been this recluse for 40 years, he was, in effect, the acting king. And this is the one case where the monarch coincides with the leader of the oligarchy. In other words, he combined both posts. Sometimes you'll have the monarch as some weak figure and the oligarchy has a different leader. But King Edward VII has got both of these.
A things. Real tyrannus.
Not exactly a tyrannus. Again, it's an oligarchical system. It's not a French-style, you know, Louis XIV absolute monarchy or something like this. It's a doge, right? He's like a doge, but of Venice, but he's if he can lead the oligarchy. And what he did... This is the person who basically organized most of the historical tragedies from about 1860 until his death. And World War I is really his handiwork. Edward VII is the guy who created the Triple Entente. In other words, Britain, France, and Russia against Germany. The encirclement of Germany.
And they started the hype that the rise of Germany is a threat.
Exactly.
They didn't even mince words. They said they're too economically powerful, too many scientists, too many patents. We've got to start a war with them.
Right. And this can teach us a lot about our current period, because the U.S.-China relationship today is a kind of an echo of the British-German relationship at the time. And, of course, that led to a world war. So he set up this alliance system, right? This idea that in 1914, when something happened in Europe, the only thing that was possible was if France started to mobilize, then everybody else had to mobilize. And once everybody started to mobilize, then war was a foregone conclusion. So Edward VII is somebody who set that up. He made a trip to North America, the first visit by at least a Prince of Wales to North America in 1860. It's thought that he helped get the American Civil War going. He did a number of things like this. So Edward VII, you'd have to say, is the indispensable person for causing World War I. Out of World War I comes World War II, pretty much directly, Nazism, communism, eventually the Cold War. The entire pattern of world history since Edward VII has been shaped as a tragedy, right, as a catastrophe.
It's all orbiting this creature.
Yeah, he's He is considered their greatest activist, right? In other words, their most successful political guy since William the Conqueror would be Edward VII. All right, we mentioned Edward VIII as a Nazi, and this he clearly was. Of course, not just him. There was a whole faction in the House of Lords, the so-called Cliftonstet. It's written Cliveden, but Cliftonstet. This is Lady Astor, Lord Astor, a whole group of dukes and lords and others who were all pro-Hitler. And this is the group that supported Chamberlain, right? The appeasement, so-called appeasement policy, which was really just the support of Hitler. And did they learn anything from this stuff, right? After 1945, you could say, well, you know, they were fooled by Hitler, many were fooled by Hitler. Prince Philip, this is a guy from a Greek-Dutch family.
Which is originally German. Stay there. Let's just come right back, because I got these idiot emails going, he's Greek and Dutch. Well, the Dutch royal family's German, ladies and gentlemen. And you're like, well, why are they then attacking Germany? Some say it might have been Germany's mistake to not basically kneel to this monarchic family who they originally came from. We'll be right back. Stay with us on the other side.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Doctor of historian, economist Webster Griffin Tarpley's here. He's breaking down the royal wedding, and we're going to get into the real power of the British monarchy, the crown, these pretenders to the throne. The throne itself is a fraud, and what this modern spectacle is all about. Then we're getting into the birth certificate and Tarpley's view on that. We're getting into the economy, the wars, and we'll get to some of your phone calls. Dr. Bob Bowman is also coming up in studio. I've got them both here to be interviewed for a film. So we're killing two birds with one stone and also doing radio interviews. Always great to have them. Okay, Webster, you were going through the buildup to World War I, World War II, the British orchestrating that, their eugenics, Nazi support. Let's continue.
All right, so Edward VII, if anybody is the architect of the catastrophe of the 20th century, Edward VII is right up there. He's at least a real contender. The question I think that your email question touched on is, what is the name of this family? Who are they, right, this royal family? Today they call themselves Windsor. They decided to call themselves Windsor in about 1916, 1917, when all of those millions of British getting killed in the First World War that Edward VII had set up. There was a huge anti-German hysteria in Britain. Up until that time, they'd been calling themselves the ruling house of Hanover, and they'd been going by that name since George I had come over, right, around 1710. But the real name of it, as you've also said, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, or Sachsen-Coburg-Gotha, or Guelph, Guelph being the anglicized version of Welf, W-E-L-F, Die Welfen. That is what the House of Hanover used to call themselves. So this is the family that now call themselves Windsor. Prince Philip of a Greek-Danish branch of this family is the guy who wants to come back as a virus. But the question was, after 1945, did they learn that Nazism was bad? Well, who was Prince Philip's best friend? His best friend, it was Prince Bernard of Holland.
Another relative, another German princeling dispatched to fertilize Queen Beatrix, the princess. And expanding on that, for those that are not aware of this, when I say they began what is Nazism, that was only one branch of the eugenics movement that they heavily financed starting in the 1850s through Galton. This is all mainline history.
In the case of Philip, his best friend, lifelong friend, was Prince Bernard of Holland. And that, of course, is the founder of the Bilderberger Group. In a way, you could say the Bilderberger Group, the royal patrons of that Bilderberger phenomenon, were Prince Philip and now the late Prince Bernard. What's with Prince Bernard? He was a minor, not very wealthy German nobleman, not even a prince. I think he was the ruler, maybe the Duke or the Count of Detmold-Lippe for sure. And he married the House of Orange, which is either they're the richest in the world or the Windsors. It's between Orange and Windsor.
And that's a big state secret. They're so powerful, they successfully have had the AP agree to never photograph them, even in public.
All right. Bernard had been, when he had been in the university in Berlin in the late 1920s, he had joined the Nazi stormtroopers. He was a brown shirt. He was a member of the SA, the Sturmabteilung. But then it was realized, of course, that you know he was on his way to.
So he left Germany, ran back, and as the German planes are invading, he does photo op shooting at them.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Before he did that, he went from the SA brown shirt stormtroopers to the SS black shirt elite, and not just the
who pledged total fealty to Adolf Hitler.
And he was a member of the Reiter SS. In other words, the part, you know, there was a subdivision of the SS, the elite of the elite, la crème de la crème, where in order to get into that one, you had to be a noble. So he was a key figure in that. Then when he married Princess of Orange there, the future queen, then Juliana, I guess it was, he had to basically resign from all of his Nazi party offices. So Prince Philip never learned not to be friendly with Nazis. He was a friend of Prince Bernard all his life. It just never ended.
And he makes constant statements on TV. He'll go, he's obsessed and obsessive compulsive. If he sees a light bulb that's burned out in a palace, he publicly says, there must be blacks working in here.
Now, his racism, very good point. The question of Lady Diana about 12 years ago, right? Princess Diana, Lady Diana Spencer, Princess Diana. She had married Charles, of course, and Charles was an adulterer. He had Camilla Parker Bowles on the side. It's typical of the family. His brother, his younger brother, Prince Andrew, known as Randy Andy, was also a rake, an adulterer.
Boy, I tell you, Camilla Parker Bowles, she looked like roadkill 50 years ago.
Today she was wearing a champagne dress, which I guess has something to do with the fact that whenever you pick up the Globe in these supermarket tabloids, it's always that she's drunk again and having a drunken fit. But Princess Diana, after having divorced Prince Charles, right, since this her life with him was unbearable, she was going to marry Dodi Fayed. Now, Dodi Fayed, of course, this is the son of Al-Fayed, who had bought this Harrods department store in London, except for about 10 or 15 years, there was a huge feud between Al-Fayed, I guess of Egypt, and Tiny Rowland. And Tiny Rowland was a guy who worked with and for the British royal family. So there had been a kind of a conflict between Al-Fayed and the royal family through Tiny Rowland. At the point that Princess Diana was going to marry Dodi Fayed, she was going to convert to Islam. So you would have had a situation, including today, if she had lived, you would have had the Queen Mother of England, or Queen of England, depending. Well, of course, by the time she converted, she wouldn't have been queen. But the Queen Mother, for sure, she would have remained, would have been a Muslim. And this would have happened about 1999, 2000, 2001.
The word is she was pregnant.
Just in time for 9/11, we would have had the whole clash of civilization strategy completely negated because the Queen Mother of England is a Muslim. So this was unacceptable. And this was a kind of a her death.
And this, of course, was the
arranged.
This was the estranged Diana showing them, you know, I'll go get myself a Muslim consort. Mm.
Her death is impossible to explain without some kind of.
And over 80% of the Brits on record in polls say they killed her. And she made a videotape and a diary and told her butler, Charles told me he's going to kill me in a fake auto accident, which is British and U.S. intelligence agency's favorite way to kill you.
And, of course, Prince Charles is one possible factor. I think you'd also have to include Prince Philip.
And the reason people are going to say, well, why are you going into all the details? It could go on for hours, folks.
It's true.
This is who we're being told is loving and good, but has no power. Now, let's get into their real power. Earlier, I read the Times of London. Islanders accused Queen of illegal eviction from Diego Garcia, the island, now turned into a giant U.S. refueling weapons base in the Indian Ocean. In the middle of the Indian Ocean, they kicked out 3,000 of the tribes that's lived there for basically ever, and she just says that she's the queen. If she has no power, she gave the order. How does she suspend parliaments? What is her real power? What is her real position? Like the Dutch, her wealth is secret.
First of all, she is fabulously wealthy. I mean, she doesn't appear on these lists. When you see something that says, you know, Warren Buffett or Bill Gates is the richest.
And they advertise her allowance in taxpayer money, the billions for heating the palaces and the rest of it, as if that's the only money.
She has a large fortune, which does not appear because it is held through this.
They have the loot of 1,000 years.
I think it's called Couts, C-O-U-T-S, is the bank that handles her personal finances. Anyway, there are trusts and other things that you don't see that she owns, right? It's rumored that she owns a good part of the real estate in Manhattan, right? That would already make her fabulously wealthy. She can dissolve Parliament anytime she wants. She can just send them all home. She has to appoint the person who tries to become prime minister. You want to try to form a government, you have to go through her.
She has governor generals.
The governor's general. Let's go through the governor's general. I think the most eloquent examples that I could cite were in 1975, you had this guy, Gow Whitlam, in Australia, who was trying to set up an alternative energy supply for Australia. He was trying to make direct oil for technology deals with Middle East oil producers, a very good thing to do. And he was then ousted, and ousted by the actions of the royal governor general, because there was a conflict between two branches of parliament.
But now the reverse is happening. Three times they try to kick out Harper. She comes in and dissolves so he can stay in.
Right. We've had this repeatedly. And even before that, I think a very good example is under Mulroney, so-called Malrené among the Québécois. Mulroney was the guy who brought you free trade, right? The giant sucking sound in the form of NAFTA. There was a large opposition in the Canadian Senate. There was no majority for this NAFTA monstrosity. So the Queen obliged Mulroney by appointing new senators, packing the Canadian Senate so that there would be a majority for this free trade treaty, which I think everybody, including Canada, has suffered under. So the power of these governor generals is extensive. And she gets these red boxes. All the top secret documents from the SIS, from MI5, MI6, the whole British intelligence establishment, right, the Treasury, she gets these red boxes and she reads them. And the entire bureaucracy serves her, the entire loyalty, right? All the officers in the army are monarchists and royalists.
Well, she has patronages. They still hand out houses and lands and little goodies.
Right, we just had the Maundy gifts, right, where she gives a piece of gold for every year of her age to these poor commoners. Ultimately, what it inculcates is the sense of being a subject, in the sense of being an inferior person. In other words, there's a sovereign, that's her, and there's a subject, and that's you, and you're a subject to the whims of the sovereign. So it's a completely degraded system. It is a feudal relic. And, of course, it's a terrible index of the degradation of the United States that people put up with this, right? And now you also look.
Well, stay there. I'm going to come back because they're really the big progenitors of the New World Order, eugenics, world population, Malthusian death cult. In here rolling, talking about the fact that they've issued three of the same birth certificate, each one with different seals and watermarks on it. And it's clear they want to make this the debate. They don't want to talk about Obama and the lobbyist and the wars and the police state and the Patriot Act and the military commissions. And we're going to cover that in the next segment. But Webster, finishing up with the royals here, looking at this, this Bernaysian, I'm sure you've studied modern advertising and Edward Bernays, you know, the father of it. But in the 20s and 30s, he advised the Department of War, then later the Pentagon. He said, look, royals are unpopular. Politicians are unpopular. You have big gala events that are seen as very elite. You have the media cover it, radio and and print, and then newsreels in the theaters, later TV. And then you get all of the movie stars and sports stars together with the politicians. You have the politicians hosted, so everyone is bowing to them. And that's all this is a Bernaysian trick, constantly lining up people to have an audience with the queen, and then they trot out this so-called commoner, so they, you know, don't have children that are unrecognizable, which is a smart move for them. Maybe they won't be as insane or brutal, and, you know, inbreeding these psychopathic tendencies. But they also arrested, including Charlie Veach, peaceful. He's the head of the love police. Folks that were going to just demonstrate against the wedding. So that shows your freedom in England. They had a sweep the last 2 days, picking everybody up who'd even criticize the wedding.
I think you would have to conclude that Great Britain is a police state far beyond anything that we've seen here in the United States.
Well, she's such a nice old lady.
With these closed-circuit TV cameras everywhere. This Windsor dynasty, they have presided over the creation of a police state. And now we have this wedding, which again is being used as a spectacle to essentially brainwash the world. They said, according to CNN, there were 2 billion people watching.
It's so incredible. No one can wait until it comes. The greatest event in history. It's so wonderful. It's fairy tale. They'll gather. Look at the diamonds. Look at the coach with the cherry interior drawn by 4 white stallions. This is absolutely the height of culture. A bunch of inbred psychopathic killers up there. Who run around at cocktail parties wearing Nazi uniforms, one of the princes. I mean, it just goes on and on.
I also would put it in a somewhat broader context. Without being xenophobic, because I'm not, you have to notice that there's now a prevalence of British voices telling you the news. Right? You put on ABC this week, you have Christiane Amanpour, whose center of gravity, wherever she comes from, is obviously London.
Fox TV, but we have a couple British guys, but they're anti-New World Order folks. They're evil too, Tarpley.
We have this guy Piers Morgan today. Piers Morgan on CNN, who's saying, wasn't this a great day for the monarchy? Hasn't the monarchy bounced back from all those troubles with Diana?
No, you're seeing the power of this house.
When you look at Al Jazeera, this is a complete British channel, right? They're all the experts.
Sir David Frost?
All of them British intelligence experts from Oxford or Cambridge or Exeter or Reading or all these other universities. What you're creating for the American people is this idea that Americans don't know anything about the world. You have to get a British expert to come and tell you about the world, and that's going to be Amanpour or Piers Morgan or other voices that are now really literally everywhere. There's a tremendous proliferation of this in the news business, and I think that's a really ominous tendency, because it used to be that an American reporter might have a different view, more egalitarian, less sympathetic to colonialism, less sympathetic to imperialism.
Now, on average, British reporters are very lapdog to police state and authority, anti-gun, knock-kneed, groveling at the feet of power.
Something like this. Their worldview, since Britain, unfortunately right now,
it's an imperial-conditioned group. The West is dying, just like Japan. And sorry, go ahead.
The social mobility, in other words, your chances, if you're born in the bottom 20% economically, your chances of getting to the top 5% right now in the United States are worse than any country in continental Europe. But the British society is even more hierarchical, more stratified, and with less mobility than we have.
And they're the king of cronyism.
So Britain is a completely oligarchical, hierarchical society.
And it's being held up as the model of everything, though it is 1984 control. We'll be back with a birth certificate. Stay with us. Bunch of inbred scum. And they sell the British people that you are British because of this house. This is your identity, is these people that have been sucking off the British people for hundreds and hundreds of years, using their blood for empires, waging war against free societies. It's unbelievable. And in closing, I'll say this about the monarchy. We've spent a lot of time on it because it's an illustration of how they sell things, how they sell the greatest thing on earth is a football game. The greatest thing on earth is watching the prince and some woman getting married. The greatest thing on earth is loving this establishment. That's your identity. And it just goes to show they can hype up the threat of terror. Better chance of being killed by a honeybee, but got to give all your rights up because of the terrorist. It shows how this stuff, upon inspection, is unbelievably, ridiculously over the top, in a satirical way, hollow. Now, Webster Griffin Tarpley, you have one final comment on that?
Yeah, look, I also want to point out the beef against the monarchy, actually, that I try to represent anyway, is a strain of thought within England, within Britain. My grandfather was from Wakefield. He was a bricklayer, skilled worker. My grandmother was from Leeds. Okay, so this is the north of England. This is Yorkshire. And in Yorkshire, there is a tradition, which is you don't like the court, you don't like Buckingham Palace, you don't like the City of London, you don't like the Foreign Office, you're suspicious of this entire imperial complex.
Well, that's Robin Hood.
This is, well, it's the north of England. That's a little bit further south, right? Nottingham.
But that's going on there, too.
This is a strain of thought inside Britain. So it's not that I'm saying British are bad. I'm saying this is a view that is also well represented inside England itself.
No. I mean, they always turn it around like you don't like social, government-run healthcare, you're a racist. You're questioning these birth certificates, you're a racist. Same thing. Oh, you don't like Chinese Communist Party? You don't like Asians. You don't like the corrupt British Empire? You hate British people. And as you said, Tarpley is Britannic, or it's really all German to begin with. Yeah,
sure. Anyway, it's a well-established tradition that the north of England, right, the Yorkshire school, is extremely hostile, skeptical against a lot of these manifestations. And I hope there are still some people who keep that going, as I tried to. But to have that come here in the United States, this is now
just, well, it's totally alien to our 1776 spirit.
Right. Again, if from the point of view of an American system traditionalist, there is nothing more revolting than the U.S. television coverage of this event, right? Fawning, gaga, idiots.
Well, it's the force feeding this joke.
Right.
It's like inviting people to a great Sunday dinner and your friends arrive and you're serving rotten possum. And they're holding up a rotten possum crawling with maggots. And they're saying, isn't it delicious, as the maggots are falling on your plate? You're like, no, it stinks. I need to throw it. And they're like, oh, it's delicious. Look, we have all these idiots gobbling it. I mean, it's like the emperor's new clothes.
Thank you for this very graphic metaphor. I'm sure the British monarchy will never recover.
Well, I mean, here are these crazed-eyed, evil, drunken people with dozens of mistresses launching all these wars, writing books about how they want a world government to carry out forced extermination. And financing they are the group that funded the social Darwinistic movement, the eugenics. It always goes back to this.
Yeah, look,
and you got the Rothschild banking cartel marrying in with them, absolutely pushing it as well.
Right. Look,
in fact, how do the Rothschilds mix into this?
Well, the Rothschilds are one of the banking houses. I mean, if you go back to King Edward VII. He had a group of bankers around him, and the significant number were also Jewish bankers.
Lord Rothschild.
One of the things that Edward VII said to the Jewish banking community in London is, if you want to be admitted into society, Edward VII's problem was he didn't have any money, and he wanted to live on a vast scale. So he said to these bankers, if I give you my investments, his investments were not a lot, I want all the profits to belong to me. I expect you to deliver profits.
Because he had political power. Mommy had all the money.
And she was a recluse. So.
Because he was he was the real king.
He was the Prince of Wales, and he was really the king, out of Marlborough House in that case. So he said to them, if there are profits, I get the profits, and you jack up the profits. If there are losses, you eat the losses. And this is Sir Ernest Castle, Rothschild is another example, although they had established themselves somewhat earlier. They got into the...
By double financing both sides of the Napoleonic Wars.
Right. And, of course, August Belmont, the guy who ran the Democratic Party from 1850 to, I don't know, 1870, 1880, the whole New York establishment dominated by August Belmont. August Belmont was officially the Rothschild agent in North America.
How did Milner tie into this?
Yeah, Milner is a kind of a think tank, right?
He's their futurist schemer.
The kindergarten, so-called. This is under Edward VII, and here's the problem that they have.
That's why I brought up Milner.
In 1899, you have the Boer War. And what the Boer War shows, first of all, is that the British are militarily very weak because the Afrikaners in Orange Free State and Transvaal defeat the British imperial forces.
And those are wild Dutch.
Yeah. They then essentially reveal the weakness of the British. And at that point, Russia, under Count Witte, proposes to France and to Germany, let's form a continental bloc against the British. Let's line up Europe against the British. And unfortunately, it didn't work. It didn't work because the German emperor, Kaiser Wilhelm, Emperor William II, the Kaiser, was so stupid and was so much of an Anglophile and was so incapable of making strategic decisions that he did not accept this golden opportunity to really prevent World War I by having a continental bloc, Russia, Germany, France, of peaceful economic development and freeze the British out. And therefore, the shock that sent... The 1899, 1900, 1901 isolation of the British is what then gave the impulse to Milner and Cecil Rhodes and people like this to come up with these round tables to begin a whole new strategy. And that's what then leads, with King Edward leading the charge, to the Triple Entente, the British-French Entente of 1903, and then the really big one is the British Russian one of 1907-1908, which was considered impossible because the big conflict had been between Russia and the English. But Edward VII was able to paper over all this stuff, and then shortly after he died, that exploded into World War I.
Yeah, they went more into a covert roundtable. CFR set up around that time in New York. It was pointed out then in the New York papers that weren't controlled by him that why is everything British, British, British? It was the affected style to speak in an Atlantic fake British accent.
Good question. And this is...
That's the Thurston the Howl. I love you.
One of the puppets of Edward VII was Theodore Roosevelt. And Theodore Roosevelt was a guy who had, had this identity crisis going. And he wanted to solve this by asserting that he was a member of the Anglo-Saxon master race. So Edward VII would write him letters saying, "Dear President Roosevelt, you and I are the leaders of the two branches of the Anglo-Saxon race. I represent the monarchical one and you represent the democratic one, but we have to work together." And Theodore Roosevelt would go gaga, right? He'd say, "Oh, my God. The king is treating me like an equal. I've got to do what he says," right? So this essentially, the U.S.-British special relationship, if you like.
And this was sold by the Boer War propagandist, Winston Churchill, who then wrote these books that were pumped out, a whole bunch of volumes. I've read several of them, dealing with the history of the English peoples.
And English-speaking peoples, yes, the Anglo-Saxon master race. Now, Winston Churchill, where does he come in? Randolph Churchill is his father. He married this woman, Jenny Jerome. Jenny Jerome came from the New York banking community, dominated by August Belmont and others. So Randolph Churchill died of syphilis, like Prince Eddie, was quite common. The Churchill family, though, is the career of Randolph Churchill was sponsored by Edward VII.
That's Marlborough.
Yeah. And Sir Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill. One of his first jobs was that he would write a letter to King Edward VII every day, telling him what had gone on in Parliament that day. So he was also a protege. So the guys who bring you the catastrophes of the 20th century are, in many cases, proteges of Edward VII. But you were talking about Malthusianism, and I think that's also worth talking about. The British East India Company has two guys that essentially define economics today. One is David Ricardo. He's the head of the British East India Company, practically, and he's the source of monetarism, right? Of Milton Friedman, Chicago School, stuff like this. However, they also have a training academy for their executives. It's called Halliburton. And here we have Malthus, Thomas Malthus. He copies things from Venetians. He copies from a guy called Ortes of Venice. But this whole idea that there are too many people, that science and technology can't make a difference.
And that's copied from Plato.
No. This is copied from Ortes. This is copied from Gian Maria Ortes.
No, but I'm saying Plato made some similar comments.
I don't see Plato really on that kind of a line at all. I would say Plato is on the.
Well, he had to duel. From what I've read, I mean, he did make comments about overpopulated and.
Look, Plato. A lot of Plato is by indirection. In other words, you can't take individual passages because a lot of times it's going to lead to a. In other words, it's some metaphorical statement.
Because he could be killed for what he was writing, so he did it.
No, there's also that sometimes he says things that turn out to be false later on in the same dialogue. But for sure, Malthus was the big ideologue of the British East India Company. And they ran genocide in India. In other words, you talk about genocide, they did it in India on a vast scale. So Malthus is this idea. World is overpopulated. Science and technology can do nothing. Progress is impossible. It'll always be the same, right? There's no way out of it. That leads to Darwin. That's essentially Darwin's worldview, which is scientifically false. Nietzsche and ultimately Hitler and the Nazis.
And the British royals love this because it said there's elite bloodlines there. The world's overpopulated. We ought to spread diseases to kill off the poor. This is Malthus, 250 years ago. And so this goes along and then develops ideas like social Darwinism. We're killing people, doing them a favor. It grows into the eugenics with Galton.
Right.
And that's this entire stream of where we are today.
And again, Prince Philip. If Prince Philip says he wants to be reincarnated as a deadly virus to come back and kill people and help solve the problem of overpopulation, again, that statement goes beyond anything Hitler ever said.
And that is repeated by all these top professors like Pianca here at UT. This is their religion. I mean, you read their writings to be entered into their club, to get the funding for publications, to be even allowed into the party, you have got to say humans are a parasite, and it's literally a control freak ultimate snobbery where they say, we're going to control history, we're going to set up a control grid, we're going to cut off resources, post-industrial world, we're going to then wipe everybody out. World government is a means to an end. This is a global, hidden Nazi movement.
Again, the answer to that that I would give is the one of Leibniz and essentially of optimism, which is simply that science and technology have repeatedly shown that
Malthus said by 1800 we would have a global collapse and everybody would die, basically. Yeah.
Gian Maria Ortes that he copied from said that the absolute upper limit of the carrying capacity of the world is 3 billion. And he said this about 1790 in an essay on population. And Malthus simply took that. So the Malthusian argument is that the population outpaces food production. It's the opposite. Food production outpaces population as long as you simply allow science and technology to be supported. People are wealth. It was their whole approach is scientifically wrong, economically wrong. People are wealth, as the Spanish tradition is, gobernar es poblar. To govern is to populate. In other words, you want to be a competent government, you want to get anywhere. You've got to...
Well, look at us now. I mean, they've done the actuaries. We're not going to be able to pay for the baby boomer aging population because they're not breeding. And they do the actuaries within another 50 years. I mean, it's total collapse. I mean, not even 50. This is all common sense. But you have this view, this feudal view, whether it was Japan, China, Europe, it's always the same tropism, as you put it, that they keep the serfs on 10% of the land. The serfs are starving to death because the elites like to keep them under their thumb. And so it's the same view. So they warp and develop modern sciences that ignore science and use these as preset ideas. And then everything else is spun around those lies.
Well, they hate science and the history of the whole Royal Society, right? The British Royal Society is they pretend to promote science. If discoveries are made, they try to pretend they discovered them, but mainly they try to sabotage them. The other thing is this mentality, and we mentioned Theodore Roosevelt. If you look at the American West, right, you fly out here, right, you look at some of these states, the ending of the frontier, right, the passing of the frontier between 1890 and 1900 in America is premature in the sense that we have a lot of states out here, right, Wyoming, Utah, right, they're basically empty. And the reason that they're empty is that the process of settlement and population growth was artificially stopped by people around Theodore Roosevelt, the great stooge of King Edward VII.
Yeah, he sold, freeze the land, have the feds grab it, don't give the land to the people. Exactly. Raise taxes so they can't afford kids.
Gifford Pinchot. This guy, Gifford Pinchot, a key guy.
So he believes in the great Anglo-Saxon, but he actually puts... Well, that's the thing about these eugenicists. They always talk about how great the Germanic or Anglo-Saxon system is, how it's wonderful, but then it's a schizophrenic policy because they seem to target their supposed own group. What is that?
A good example, back in this Boer War period, right? The first concentration camps of the 20th century... death camps in effect.
We're Afrikaners.
The British putting these Dutch in concentration camps, and you go to them and say, "What sense does this make?" Right? You claim to be a race theorist, but you're putting these Dutch in a concentration camp here in the middle of Africa. What sense does it make? In other words, it's a fraud. In other words, it's ultimately only designed to serve imperial power. What they were concerned about in the case of the United States, the Homestead Act is one of the greatest land reforms in human history, right? The idea that you got this immense expanse and you're going to make that into family farms. And the British and the oligarchs say, no, we don't want that because such people are going to be independent-minded. They're not going to take
over. They already had the experience with the British colonies here in North America, and this is the essence, and now they see the rebellion. They see people becoming independent. They see the moves out west to take the 80% of the land held by the feds of the states and serve it out to the people.
Or these ideas that you're going to cut off water to a whole important farming area.
Klamath Falls, Oregon.
Which is simply...
For some fish that isn't even indigenous.
Yeah, the snail darter.
Stay there. We're going to come right back. The essence of the enemy. Webster Tarpley is going to be with us a little bit in the next hour. We've gotten off into a history lesson, but it's very intriguing. And I noticed the numbers of people just listening on the internet are surging because this is interesting. They tell you that people don't want history, real history, but they do. People are hungry for something other than celebrity news or how great the inbred family is. We do need to shift gears now in the next few segments into your view on the whole birth certificate situation, Webster, then the economy, then Dr. Bob Bowman's coming in.
Well, first of all, let me say, my standard for this stuff is if you want to be president, it means that you want to get your hand on the thermonuclear button. And that means that you acquire life and death power over all of us, ourselves, our families, our futures, and everything else. At that point, there is no private sphere. Any private sphere is a danger. It's a threat to the integrity of the government and of presidential decisions, because anything that's in that private sphere could be the object of blackmail. And the way that I would approach this whole thing with Obama is from the point of view of blackmail. So if you want to be president, you've got to put out your transcripts. For Obama, that would mean Punahou School, Occidental College, Columbia University, Harvard. All of this is secret. Very, very much covered up who the professors were, what the grades were, things that he wrote. We'd be interested to know. We want to know your medical records, right? We wanted to know Dukakis's medical records. We want to know, have you had electroshock? Are you HIV positive? These are all things that the public has a right to know. If you look at this amazing hysteria of the Wall Street media, you'll see that they basically say, we oligarchs have the right to cover up. Oligarchs have the right to hide things. And we would have to say, no. The public, the informed voter, has the right to know these things, because we always have this question about, is the president blackmailed? And if he's blackmailed, how can he be president? And I guess that applies.
Well, the larger issue is they've been so secretive for years about all this. They released the receipt of a certificate and said that was it. There was no such thing as a long form, which was a ridiculous lie and made people go, wow, what are you hiding? Is it possible, Webster, that this is all just a setup to divert us off into just the birth certificate instead of bigger issues?
I don't see it that way. I think this is the key to the bigger issues. See, the problem with Obama is you want to deal with Obama on big issues. The problem with that is he lies. His whole method is based on deception, on dissembling. He'll never give you a straight answer. How are you going to nail him down? The tax cuts for the rich. He ran. He was against tax cuts for the rich. Last December, he's for tax cuts for the rich. Now he says, I'll never go back to tax cuts for the rich again. Who can believe this? It's fantastic. I would rather look at it this way, and I'll tell you, it's like a parable, and it's a story. In 1998, Bill Clinton was about to make a dirty deal with Newt Gingrich, and the dirty deal was the oligarchy wants to destroy Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the economic rights and entitlements of the American people. And Clinton was willing to do it, according to what we know. You might say, well, he was weakened by impeachment, whatever the reasons. Clinton was willing to do it. He was willing to betray his own base. He was willing to shift to a situation where Clinton's majority in the Congress would be largely provided by Gingrich. Now, the intermediary was Erskine Bowles. There's a book about this. It's called The Pact. Look it up. Erskine Bowles was the go-between. Now, what stopped this? Most people were not even aware of it much of the time. What stopped it was Miss Lewinsky. And Miss Lewinsky, whoever sent her, that's a whole separate question. But the effect of Miss Lewinsky was that the Republicans in the House went crazy. They couldn't be seen supporting Clinton. And even more acute was that inside the Democratic Party, all of those guys from the Democratic Leadership Conference, right, the right-wing Democrats, ran for cover. They wouldn't touch Clinton. They wouldn't do anything for him. The New Deal Democrats, if you can call them that, in other words, the Progressive Caucus, they were willing to stand and fight to defend Clinton. And Clinton looked at that and said, my God, if I try to destroy the main New Deal entitlement programs, these progressives are going to run away from me, and I'll have no support at all. Therefore, all right. I can't do it.
Now, got a break. Back in 1 minute. We've got to do these satellite breaks.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Webster Griffin Tarpley, our guest for another 15 minutes or so. Then Dr. Bob Bowman is coming in, former director of the Star Wars Initiative, to talk about the economy and a host of other issues. Webster, I want to quantify my view on the economic system. We come back from break, but please continue with this point. You were telling me off air that look, these scandals, regardless basically of Obama's not doing what you want, you've got to politically go after him with whatever ammo is getting traction.
Yeah, during the 2008 campaign, there was this mantra, you know, let's talk about the issues, let's talk about the issues. This was Obama attempting to deflect attention from the fact that nobody knew who he was. If we can look at the question of Clinton and Gingrich and that dirty deal, which would have been very damaging, was stopped by the Lewinsky scandal. How can we apply that till today? You look at Obama's press conference when he presented this so-called purported birth certificate. He basically said, we've got to get down to solving the main questions. Now, what he means by that, and this is what he told the Washington Post editorial board a week before he was inaugurated, is a grand bargain of genocidal austerity to flay the American people alive, to skin the American people alive. You have the Republican attack on the entitlements is direct, right? Open, frontal attack. Obama's attack is a flanking attack. It's a sneak attack, right? Obama bores from within. He says, I'm going to save Medicare. And then he's going to destroy it.
Well, it's a fake choice. The Republicans have the more austere. And then by a few degrees, he says, no, I'm going to defend the people, and then impales them.
So what could upset this apple cart right now? He says that he solved the birth certificate. I don't think he has. I think there are basically three complexes, right? One is the birth certificate issue. The questions we have on that are obviously, if you're a historian, right, when you say release the document, right, we want the document, it means you want to get it in your hands. And what I mean by that is, if it's claimed that this document is there, I want to know the arrangements under which scientific experts, including carbon dating or whatever there is, whatever anybody wants to do, scholars, like a guy like me, or news agencies, different ones, have to have access to this.
By the
way,
there's
document.
Been three different versions that AP and others, CNN, have been given. And in the versions, in fact, give me a document cam shot. Folks can even see this.
He's making up for all the time. He gave you three now.
Well, no, look. This one says any alterations invalidate the certificate. This one that AP put out has that message on it. And then there's this version. I think this was what CNN. You can barely see it there, and it's totally different color. And then now here's the one the White House put out with this weird green paper in the background. And then you've got fonts in the same words, Webster, that aren't even the same font that I as a layman can see. Listen, the reason I think this is a setup is this is so shoddy on purpose. It's designed. Webster, I'm telling you, something else is going on here.
We want to examine the original document.
Yeah, but what is this? Why are there all these different versions?
Maybe WikiLeaks will leak one, too, except that they're a CIA-limited hangout. No, we want scholars, scientists, experts, news agencies to be able to examine the original under controlled conditions and all of that. The larger issue in terms of his constitutional qualification is, did he become a naturalized citizen of Indonesia through his parents? And since that wouldn't quite deprive him of his U.S. nationality, did he then in 1981, on his way to Pakistan, pass through Indonesia and renew his Indonesian passport as part of that? That would have been an affirmative act of allegiance to Indonesia.
Stay there. We got a break. Final segment with Webster coming up, and Webster's here in town to be interviewed for a film. So never fear. There'll be more of Webster at PrisonPlanet.tv as well. Then Dr. Bob Bowman coming in after the end of this next segment. Stay with us.
Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Coming up, Dr. Bob Bowman's going to be in studio with us to talk about the economy and a host of other issues. Webster Griffin Tarpley is our guest here with us now. Very informative last hour. And it's great having Tarpley here in town. Flew Tarpley into town so that he could be here in studio with us today. Webster, finishing up on the birth certificate. There's no doubt there's been a cover-up of all of his records. And the White House has said, we're not releasing any of the college, the professors. We've never seen such secrecy. And why defend $2 million plus in suits wanting the certificate and then now only release it? It seems like they were starting to get scared that it was getting so big, but then they released this new certificate and it just looks completely fake. They could make a better fake than this.
Perhaps. It's all very suspicious. Again, we want to be able to examine the original document, and we need answers about this Indonesian question. Did he reaffirm his citizenship of Indonesia in 1981? And that would have been essentially as an adult, and that would at that point he would no longer be a U.S. citizen. But there's also a political reason behind this, obviously, which I think is important. One is the blackmail question, that Obama is somebody who is, I think, pretty obviously blackmailed. And the lot of people wondering what happened in the 72 hours before the bombing of Libya when he told Senator Lugar of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, there will be no attack on Libya. And then, lo and behold, there was this attack on Libya. What happened in the meantime? Hypothesis. British intelligence has some proof about Kenya or Indonesia, or French intelligence. They went to him and said, look here, you're going to bomb Libya because this is what we want. The Daily Beast recently had an article about a Democratic insider on Capitol Hill asking, after Obama's budget disaster, how do we get rid of this guy? So that's a Democrat now. Premier left.
We saw the Washington Post a year ago say that they were talking about him not running again.
All right. One way is through the birth certificate, the constitutional qualifications between Kenya, Indonesia, or other things we don't know. The second one is the Rezko Blagojevich complex. In other words, the Chicago cesspool of corruption, the Illinois bipartisan combine, and so forth. Because whatever applies to Rezko and Blagojevich is possibly applying to him. And then you have the Larry Sinclair complex, right, which people know about. So those are three that we know about, but there are possibly more.
I'd rather go after Obama and the next Republican puppet, because they're all going to be crooks. We know that, unless it's Ron Paul or somebody, on GE being given waivers for their coal power plants. The day the new regulations that they're just forcing through, they're not even law, shutting down their competition, or GE not paying taxes, or people at Treasury giving themselves waivers to get bailout money. I mean, I understand you're saying this is the type of fodder the public likes, but, you know, quite frankly, Obama in limos with men, I mean, it's I don't even want to get into it. And the birth certificate, it's like a swamp, a quagmire that I can't get out of, and you could never find the end of. I mean, I'd rather say, what are you doing pushing torture, bub?
I would make the following kind of appeal. I think basically a lot of people who consider themselves right-wingers or conservatives or libertarians have, I think, a fairly decent willingness to entertain these issues. I would appeal to leftists. I would appeal to people, for example, who thought that Obama...
People don't want my guns. Nice folks.
Well, no. this is a group, right? And there they are. Let's not write them off. Let's
a group of addled morons.
Well,
sorry.
You know, depends, right? Addled morons everywhere.
I'm just being sarcastic. I'm sarcastic.
If you were appalled by the attack on Libya, for example, right? If you were appalled by the West Point speech of December 2009, which was a declaration of war against Pakistan, and that's getting to be really big now.
But the left's all foundation run. They love the wars. They love torture.
And that's why I got to make my direct appeal here. That if you didn't like what he did with Pakistan, and he's doing more of it, if you don't like Libya, what are you going to do to stop an attack on Syria? What are you going to do to, for example, Belarus, Poland at one end, Russia at the other end, a color revolution in Belarus. Lukashenko decides he's going to put it down. Polish troops come in from the west. Russian troops come in from the east. Polish NATO troops collide with Russian troops.
That already happened in Pristina, Kosovo.
That's worse than anything in the Middle East, because there you've got not just atomic but hydrogen weapons on both sides. How do you stop that? On the issues, yeah, I'm all for the issues. I argue issues a lot, right? My main argument is issues. But I would appeal to leftists. You've got to be open to these questions about the constitutional qualifications and so forth. Because if you don't do this, you're letting the blackmail syndicate rule the day. Because Obama he can't make decisions based on political considerations. He's got to say...
No, I understand the political... I understand Webster, the political calculus. But to add a word here, I understand the political calculus. All I'm saying, I mean, I see if you've got a bad George W. Bush, a bad Clinton, a bad Obama, that it creates the separation of powers we need over the oligarchy controlling the presidency if we politically destroy his puppet.
And look, if you have people in the Congress that you think are somehow different, then, you know, anybody with a subcommittee in the Congress or a committee can put out subpoenas. You can maybe get a majority.
So you're saying it's a useful sabotage tool. Let me ask you this. In your gut, what do you think is really going on with Obama?
With
the birth certificate.
I think that I'm not sure where exactly the problem point is, but the obvious evasion, he paid a tremendous political price for refusing to release whatever this is, if it's assuming it's real. He has created a constitutional crisis. This is now a constitutional crisis.
So he's now legit. I mean, he's now supercharged the debate.
He did this, if he had it and he refused to release it, this is an act of incompetence beyond anybody's belief. And it's a bumbling, arrogant refusal to put this out. Now, that then leads you, is he really that incompetent, or was it that he didn't have it and he had to concoct it? So that's another possibility. But transparency, right? These guys talk about my administration will be the most transparent. Well, let's see it. And again, I think that people, if you don't like the fact that he's a Wall Street puppet, if you don't like the fact that he's a warmonger, that the police state has gotten worse under Obama than it was under Bush, And if you don't like the fact that he's a union buster, that he guarantees the defeat of all the union struggles, you look at what he did in Wisconsin. He didn't support those people. He damned them with faint praise. So if you want to get a different Democratic nominee, right, something a little bit better than this, there's got to be a primary opponent. And one way to clear the way is for these scandals to be further developed. So I wouldn't turn away from that at all. And I certainly don't think this is a plan of the ruling
right.
elite. The
Webster,
ruling,
we are out of
time. The ruling elite wants to keep him in power and blackmail him for at least 2 more years.
No, I understand, and perhaps 4 more. Some Republicans have said they want to keep him there forever. Then they can blame everything on him, and a lot of this agenda is all part of what they're doing.
And he suppresses the popular movement to protest.
We've only got about a minute, okay, because I got a mini-guest popping in, and then Bob Bowman's coming in, Webster, and we're going to be interviewing you more later, and it's just I could talk to you for 10 hours here, and other listeners could listen for 10 hours but on your unique perspectives. But they're now going from denying we're in a depression to more and more having to, denying there's inflation to admitting it. The Chinese, everybody racing away from the dollar, gold and silver spiking, oil commodities spiking. A 60-second summation on where the economy is right now in the meltdown.
Well, the entire effort of 2010 was to direct the crisis away from the dollar, right, to dump the depression onto the euro. And what they've done with that is they've partially wrecked the euro through Greece, Portugal, Ireland, and maybe Spain. So the euro is now significantly weakened, but that hasn't done anything to save the dollar. So the dollar is now in this constant process of decline. If we have a default, I would warn against this default. The bankruptcy or default of the United States would lead to catastrophe on a world scale and ultimately to something like...
So in the lesser of two evils is to hyperinflate the currency.
The answer to this, there is no answer between deflationary crash, which is even worse... Than hyperinflation.
You know what? I've got to do this. We're going to have you in at the end of this hour for 5 minutes to really sum this up. We're going to come back to this in about 40 minutes from now. Webster, thank you so much. And just sit tight till the break. Briefly, because it's running up so fast right now, only got 2 minutes before break, then Bob Bowman's coming in. Ted Anderson, Midas Resources, with the gold and silver weekend offer. Ted buys the gold and silver months ago, still sells it to you when it goes up. That's how he's got the best deals, bar none, that I found anywhere. These radio specials are it. Ted, briefly, where is gold and silver right now? I know they're power surging.
Holy schmoles, Alex. I mean, 1563.70 now. It's just going through the roof. Gold right now, or that's silver, or that's gold. Silver, 49.24. It's been just an amazing day. Still doing the silver dollars in your videos for 125. Boy, if people want to take advantage of it, I have some Franks here that I haven't moved up in price yet at 336. You get that full year subscription.
By the way, to get those three silver dollars anywhere, it's 150. You got three silver dollars, 125. You've got three of my best selling films on top of it and free shipping. That's got to be now $80 off what it should cost, 90?
Yeah, it's getting into those numbers, man. You're not going to be able to find that anywhere. The market does. There isn't a single. I don't care. It's eBay, Craigslist, garage sales. I mean, you name it. You're not going to buy silver dollars at that price anymore.
And with the three films and the free shipping, it's insane. But you did buy it when it was a lot lower. So instead of taking the big profit, you're just giving it to folks. And believe me, the brokers are great folks, but they're not communists. They don't like this deal. 800-686-2237. It's gone up a little from what it was a few weeks ago. How long can you hold this, Ted?
Well, I'm going to hold it through Sunday, Alex. The markets are so crazy. I'm pretty sure I'll have to raise them a lot on Monday. So
800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. Midas Resources. When you call, there's a whole list, a whole constellation of other radio specials. Silver half dollars, gold franc, sovereigns, maple leafs, buffaloes, gold eagles. 800-686-2237 to get in the time machine and go back months ago to get the lower price. The time machine does exist right here, brought to you by Ted Anderson. 800-686-2237. Thank you so much, Ted Anderson. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, as commodities turbocharge as the dollar slides.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame.
Dr. Robert Bowman joins us for the balance of the hour. Everybody, the TARP is going to pop back in to finish up with that economic breakdown in the first 5 minutes of the next hour. Robert M. Bowman is the former director of Advanced Space Program Development for the U.S. Air Force, Star Wars program, and a former United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel with 101 combat missions in Vietnam. He holds a Ph.D. in aeronautics and nuclear engineering. He has three of those from the California Institute of Technology. ThePatriots.us is his website, and he's traveling around the country with the Patriots speaking tour, trying to get the word out to Americans. This is a short segment. I talked to you during the break. I said, what do you want to get into, the wars, the imploding economy? And you said absolutely both of those. Which one you want to tackle first? This new global strategic invasion using fake rebels that they then use as a pretext to take over? Or is that not your view? Or do you want to get into the economy?
Well, they're so closely related because we're in all of these wars to secure and maintain an empire for the multinational corporations and banks. It's all about empire. And it's not about the American people, except to further impoverish us because we pay for it all. And the money is being siphoned up to the banks, to the billionaires. So it's hard to separate them. But this year's speaking tour really is about end of empire. We must no longer have puppet dictators around the world that we support with our troops and send them arms, which when they get a little independent, we have to send our troops to fight against them, as we have against so many of our former puppet dictators like Saddam Hussein and Noriega and you name it. But, we have to have a constitutional foreign and military policy. If you take a look at this document, it doesn't say anything in here about using our armed forces to go around the world and prop up the financial interests of multinational corporations and banks. It's about protecting our people and our borders, period. And if that was our military mission, if that was our only military mission, we could bring our troops home from those 700 bases around the world.
But they're always changing the definition because they're giving us false reasons of why they're in the countries. Really, it's about occupation.
It's about occupation. And, I mean, why after 66 years are we still occupying Germany and Japan, for example? No, the whole thing is ridiculous. And we've got to stop it. We've got to go back to being just another sovereign, independent member of the family of nations. And when we do that and when we bring our troops home, we can enormously enhance our national security and at the same time reduce the defense budget by 80%. Now, there's fiscal responsibility. There's money that we can use for crumbling roads and bridges and hospitals and schools and infrastructure. There's money we can use to take care of the elderly and the indigent. Slash Medicare, slash Medicaid. These are the things both of those stupid parties are talking about now. And they're not talking about the obvious, which is to stop being the hired guns of global runaway capitalism.
Well, I mean, to even call it capitalism, I'm a total libertarian free market guy. Mm-hmm. Having trillions to banker bailouts, having trillions in corporate welfare, and there's no discussion about cutting that. And instead, it's cut the food stamps or cut the Medicare, the Medicaid, the Social Security, which will only stall the economy out more. I don't like the dependency. If you're going to have welfare, it should be at a state level, in my view. But obviously, this is the same model of austerity the same banking cartels have put in Argentina, Eastern Europe. And we know this leads to more poverty. This is their system of destroying their competition.
And this is exactly why we're in a lot of those countries. Take a look at the countries we've invaded, like Iraq, like Libya. And what you find with all of these countries, they happen to be the few countries in the world that are not part of the Rothschilds banking cartel. They are independent of them. They do not take money from the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. They print their own money like we're supposed to do under our Constitution. They print their money debt-free, and they use it to do what they want to do.
Dr. Bob Bowman, stay there. I want to come back to that. First thing they did within a week of the Al-Qaeda rebels they put in Libya was a new central bank funded by the British and a new oil company. We'll be right back.
You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Well, the former director of the Star Wars program is here. I want to get a little bit into Fukushima. Boy,
in the heart of FEMA region,
that thing is just continuing to get more and more serious as things unfold. We're going to get his take on that, more on the economy. But Dr. Bowman, looking at this, they've been telling us that we haven't had a recession in 2 years when it's a depression. And I've got the headlines here today where the public is saying we don't, you know, the media is saying the public's not buying that the economy's great. The food stamps at 45 million, the unemployment, the housing prices plunging. A lot of the restaurants I like to go to over the years, they're all shutting down. All my family I know is making a lot less money, not doing well. Some of them doing terrible. People they know don't even have money for gas. And they're now in the media talking about $7 a gallon by next year because of the dollar. They're now admitting things are going up because of dollar devaluation. Mm-hmm. And their answer is give unlimited trillions to the bankers. But again, go for austerity. And sure, there's some welfare moms. There's some waste. I don't like the illegals coming over with the anchor babies and I got to pay for it. But at the end of the day, they're not the Federal Reserve System itself designed to transfer all wealth. We're now entering that final phase. I don't want to be like Argentina. I don't want them to win. We've got to identify them.
That's right. And when you get a country that is not part of that cartel, like Libya, they can do things. Libya has some oil over there. Not an enormous amount, but they've got oil. Gaddafi didn't let the oil companies steal it all and take all the profits like most of our puppets. He nationalized it. So the country of Libya gets the profits, and every Libyan person gets $500 a year or more directly out of the oil profits. Housing is free. Education is free. Health care is free. Every young couple, when they get married, gets $50,000 to start. Cars are subsidized. They're affordable. In other words, most of the ordinary people of Libya are pretty well off, very well off compared to almost everybody else in the Middle East. So why is this thing happening? Well, of course, the CIA is stirring up some opposition among the tribes that are against Libya's Pan-African program. And the reason that the CIA is stirring it up is because, number one, Gaddafi is not part of the Rothschilds banking cartel, and number two, he nationalized the oil companies. Those are the two cardinal sins, the same things that got Mossadegh in trouble, the same things that got Saddam Hussein in trouble. All of the, you know, it comes down to the same thing. You can predict who we're going to call part of the axis of evil and who is going to be one of the good guys. I mean, why now are we not sending troops in to provide air cover for the protesters in Bahrain? You know, their leader is one of our puppets.
And it's so transparent, and then they call it humanitarian. We've got to invade. He's beating up protesters. He ran to Venezuela. Turned out that really wasn't true, the strafing of the crowds. But then meanwhile, our allies strafe people, and it's humanitarian. And we get the new Marine Corps documents and Army documents where they actually tell them in Afghanistan, go in and just kill everybody. I mean, these are serious war crimes being confirmed on a daily basis, and it's just like, so what? We're the good guys.
Yeah, well, We haven't really been the good guys for a long time, and it's about time that the American people understood that, understood what the politicians and the banksters are doing to this country and the immorality that they're foisting on our country through its policies. And it's time that our brave young men and women in the armed forces understood that they are not on a humanitarian mission. They're not being the good guys. They're working for the bad guys. They're part of empire.
But it's so elementary. Foreign, sophisticated corporations that work as pirate ships. People think of capitalist, communist. These are piratical criminal groups who come in with high-tech propaganda. They buy off politicians. They get laws passed to shut down their competition. They use our muscle and our funds and our blood to launch wars to take over, to give them a Lebensraum. And then we're left holding the bag, and world governments openly being announced, run by the very Ponzi scheme operating banks. Mm-hmm. And it's all out in the open. And then they write New York Magazine articles and Rolling Stone articles and Nightline pieces making fun of me when it's all just public and I'm not even smart, Dr. Bowman, and it's just all history, prima facie, 100%, open and shut, there it is. They're perfecting a high-tech spy grid. They're training us to be slaves. The TSA hands down the pants. Mm-hmm. And it's just, anyone who knows any history knows this is coming on like a freight train. We've already been hit by it. And what do you do?
Speaking of history, guy you had on last, Webster Tarpley, knows more history than most people have forgotten. I mean, Webster and I stayed up one night. We were staying at the same home, and we stayed up until 2 o'clock in the morning drinking wine and talking history. I mean, the guy is really amazing. And it's good to
see. Well, a lot of people act like they know languages, but my wife grew up in Europe because her dad was a diplomat, uh-huh. And she speaks, you know, really five languages fluently, yeah. French, Spanish, I mean, you name it, Italian, and I've talked to other folks who speak languages well, and they say Tarpley's not fudging it. I mean, he knows all these languages, all this history. He's the real deal.
Yeah, he is indeed. When you were and he were talking, the subject came up of a challenge of Obama. This is something that I've been trying to promote, and I've been trying to get Dennis Kucinich to do it. He's not going to do it. I've been trying to get some of the other big names to do it. They're not going to do it. If nobody else is going to do it, I'll do it, you know. But I don't have any money to do it, but that's another thing. Somebody has got to challenge Obama and put issues on the table that neither party is raising. Nobody is talking
because about right now there's one party that just has some window dressing. I've told Republicans, yeah. I've told Republicans who hate Obama and dislike his policies, I've told them, if you actually analyze what Obama has really done versus the rhetoric, you guys should love him. Wars, torture, bailouts to the bankers, secret arrest.
He's continued everything Bush started. He's Bush light. And in some cases, he's even extended them. But, you know, war criminal, what Obama has done in continuing these wars, we can make a good case for him being charged with war crimes. But George W. Bush started the damn things, started them on the basis of lies. I mean, that's real war crime.
And he writes books bragging how he ordered torture, but when his people got caught, scores went to prison, and then he brags about it.
Yeah. The American people have to wake up and understand that things aren't going to be solved by just electing Republicans or just electing Democrats. Both parties are owned by the same powerful billionaires, the global elite, the banksters, the multinational corporations. And until the American people understand that and understand that we have to change the system, that we have to get big money out of politics and once again have representatives in Congress that really represent us, not the big money interests that line their pockets. Until that, nothing really is going to get done. There's only a couple of people in Washington who understand this, people like Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul. If I could get a fusion ticket of those two and say, screw the Republicans, screw the Democrats, we'd really have something, because those are a couple of people at the opposite ends of the political spectrum who understand, who want to follow the Constitution, who want to honor the truth, and who want to serve the people. That's what we need. That's what the Patriots is all about, my organization.
Well, there's some good news. I monitor liberal radio, conservative, libertarian, the whole spectrum TV. And in the last month, as the pain has gotten bad enough, and as they've stopped denying that we're in an economic freefall because it doesn't work anymore, and as enough people that thought they were part of the power structure feel the pain, they're now admitting not corporations good, welfare people bad, or welfare people good, corporations bad, rich good, or rich bad. A more sophisticated, reality-based thing is emerging. They're going, wait a minute, there's ultra-super-rich corporations that pay almost no taxes or none. Mm-hmm. They use government to get corporate welfare and shut down their competition.
Yeah.
And they are setting up a global system to rob us and get rid of the middle class where we fit the bill for everything. And I'm hearing liberals say it. I'm hearing Glenn Beck say it. I'm hearing mainline conservatives say it. I'm hearing Michael Savage say it. And I never heard this even a few months ago. And I'd like to say this show, you know, is putting some of the reality-based talking points out, but others are. And so I'm seeing a real shift where people are saying, wait, we better cut defense, a lot of conservatives led by Rand Paul. We better get out of this empire because it's all over. And the offshore banks, they don't care. They have the 112 points in the IMF World Bank documents that came out in 2002 where they like to suck you dry, then implode you, then bring in austerity that makes it worse, and then offer a new solution, more austerity. Yeah. I mean, folks better understand. You better grow out of your Republican, Democratic, limited, little, mindless, fairy tale paradigm. You better get religion about world history and world government and what oligarchs do and the same tropisms they set up each time, or it's over. I mean, this is real. We're going into a depression, hyperinflation. They have set up a police state. They are training the neighborhood people to be spies. They are visiting all the major doctors and community leaders to spy on their patients. They visited my dad. They visited other people he works with. They're going to other dentists he knows. I mean, this is a major D-Day level buildup against us. I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, this is real tyranny.
Yeah, and the guys on the right, a lot of them say, oh, you know, we blame government. You know, it's big government's the problem. Guys on the left say, oh, big business is the problem. What they don't understand is that those are two sides of the same coin. When you have the fusion of industry and government, you have fascism. That's exactly what Benito Mussolini defined as fascism, and it is. And that's what we've got, because we have a government that is wholly owned by the biggest business, these oligarchs that you're talking about, the banking empire. And they own our government right now. And so it's not that the government is too big. It's just that the government's in the wrong hands and serves the wrong people. We need a government big enough and strong enough, but most importantly, independent enough to protect the people from those giant corporations. And right now it can't, and it won't, because it doesn't want to, because it's feeding off them.
Well, but then there's the argument of allowing big government to grow, then allowed a big enough government to siphon off our money to the big corporations. But regardless now, these corporations, I mean, what, more than half the top 100 biggest economies are not even countries. They're corporations. Yeah. These have intelligence networks. They have spies in every strata of society. They are government. People need to get that. Yeah. They are sovereign. They operate. They do what they want. They're above the law. And then we're not.
They have no loyalty to our country at all. Most of them don't pay taxes to our country. They've got some rinky-dink headquarters.
It's the Fortune 100 that actually lobbies for higher taxes on Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the insurance companies. That's how deceptive. Oh, you want socialist health care? Oh, you don't want to help old ladies. You're a racist. Then you get the health care bill written by the insurance companies to cut care, to not let doctors carry out the care, and to make 35 million people buy the insurance doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. And you've got to have arguments with dumb mainline liberals that think you want to take free health care from somebody. It doesn't exist. It's such a fraud that we're having a debate about health care when it's not. Oh, man.
It is. When you get to health care, my conservative position is, as a conservative, I believe that the only fiscally responsible way to provide health care is to eliminate the profit, the overhead, the red tape, and the interference between doctor and patient of the insurance companies by kicking them out of health care altogether. I would much rather have a single-payer national health system, no insurance companies. The government doesn't run health care. It just does one thing. It pays the bill. And the bill would be about 60% of what it is now, because we'd get rid of all of that profit and overhead.
Well, when you talk about...
I know that's not libertarian, but hey, I swing both ways. A lot of my talks are co-sponsored by the Libertarian Party and the Green
Party. I understand that. Well, look, we already have a form of collectivism. The insurance companies owned by the megabanks have written a system where the profits are private and the loss is public.
Yeah. Socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. That's what we've got.
Yeah, and they take our wealth. So I'm saying government has become the conduit of that, and the libertarians come in and say, privatize. Well, now you've just got a new government called a corporation over you who even jacks it up more.
You're right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But see, I mean, again, they make it so simple. Liberal, conservative, libertarian.
Yeah.
But you have to debate what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
What these things really are, not their definitions. Dr. Bowman, but looking at where we are now, I mean, do you have any doubt that the meltdown is accelerating?
No, of course it's the only thing that you can do where we are. The meltdown is accelerating, just like the one at Fukushima. But what we have to do is understand what we can do about it. And the American people, workers, have to understand that they're being robbed blind. They complain about the taxes that are taken out of their paycheck. What they don't understand is that the corporations tax them 20 times as heavily as the government by taking these huge amounts for overhead and profit out of the money that we, the people, create with our labor. Every hour of our labor, we create some $250 in wealth. So how come take-home pay is $8 an hour? Well, the government takes $2. Okay, that would make it 10. What happened to the other $240? The corporations stole it. That's what happened to it. And workers have to understand that.
Well, they've created an unfair playing field by constantly having the laws written to shut down their competition.
Yeah, and that's, they use the government for their purposes so that the government is no longer protecting us from them, like Teddy Roosevelt tried to do and like FDR tried to do. Both parties, you know, conservative and liberal, doesn't matter. Both parties for ages have recognized the danger of the corporations getting too much power. Heck, Thomas Jefferson talked about it.
Again, there's the mega corporations that have all the lawyers and write the loopholes. They are the ones that get away with murder.
Yeah, we're not talking about mom and pop grocery stores here.
No, exactly. Who have a corporation for liability. So if somebody slips and breaks their ankle, they can't take, you know, Susie's college money.
Yeah.
And again, as people send me emails saying, what you're saying, all corporations are bad. No, folks, we're not saying that. Again, people see things through a one-dimensional lens. We've got to start trying to really see things in a more complex 360 view. Colonel Bob Bowman, by the way, speaking live tomorrow night in Austin. He's also speaking at Truth Seekers, that's public, but with Randall Mott, great guy, but I'm not sure where they're meeting right now. But we'll tell you tomorrow night where he's meeting. We got five more minutes here with Dr. Bob Bowman, thepatriots.us. And then Tarpley's going to pop back in because we ran out of time with him to finish up his economic breakdown of just how serious things are going. And I remember him years ago saying, first they'll try to bring down Europe, then the contagion will spread to the West. It's now begun. A very serious situation. Colonel Bob Bowman is going to be speaking tomorrow night at Brave New Books in Austin, Texas, down off Guadalupe Street, 1904 Guadalupe Street. Really needs no introduction for Austinites. Get there early because it only holds about 150 people, and that'll be Saturday, April 30th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central. Always great to hear him uninterrupted by the radio breaks and things, so folks can check that out. Dr. Bowman, I mean, the crisis isn't approaching. It's here, kind of like a fire in a house. It's now, you know, the house is on fire. If it continues, the whole house is going to burn down. How do you see the globalists, the social engineers, the oligarchy striking back? I see false flag written all over the place, and I see these White House advisors saying how great this would be and to really accelerate their new wars and their domestic crackdown.
Yeah, we have to understand that the entire war on terror is phony, up one side and down the other. Not just because 9/11 was a lie, you know, we all know that. But beyond that, that the real reasons for Iraq and for Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. Those wars were planned way in advance before 9/11, planned in detail, pushed for by, you know, the PNAC crowd, Wolfowitz and Pearl and Zelikow and Cheney and, you know, all the traitors. So it's pursuit of empire. We have to end that. We have to bring our brave young men and women home while they're still alive. We have to start using the money to serve the people of this country. We need to end the Fed, abolish the Fed, get rid of that debt to the Fed. We need to nationalize insolvent banks, not bail them out. You know, if they're too big to fail, they're too big to exist. We used to have antitrust laws in this country, and they were to protect business.
And it turned out in the analysis, even in BBC had to admit it, that in Ireland and Iceland, they've analyzed over 90% of the debt is the private banks who were there posing as the saviors. Folks, we don't owe this. It's made up, most of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so we need to do things differently. The United States and all its individual states should be like North Dakota, who has their own bank, not for profit. North Dakota, the state, has no debt. People there can get loans from the state bank.
And they have bigger families.
And, you know,
it's a policy of life on a policy of death.
We've got to get rid of the Fed, the whole debt-based monetary system, everything associated with it. We have to go back to my old boss, Eisenhower, and rethink his statement about the power of the military-industrial complex. And we know that it, too, is owned by...
Yeah, they've sold it that you're a commie, you're a wimp. You're whatever if you don't love the military-industrial complex. Folks, it controls almost all research, funding, and it's run by foreign corporations that are destroying every canon of the Bill of Rights and Constitution. America is the founding documents and the ideas of liberty and our culture and our history of freedom. It's not whatever the corporations package up and wrap in an American flag.
Yeah,
they could have little cyanide pills with American flags on them.
We have given up most of the rights that were given to us by this Constitution and Bill of Rights by letting them pass these screwy, misnamed Patriot Act and Military Commissions Act. They take our rights away unconstitutionally. You know, you can't take these rights away by passing...
That's right. It's treason. Bob Bowman?
Some puppet dictator.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm amazing. We got 5 minutes in this segment, Webster, to give us the diagnosis of what's happening geopolitically with the world economy as the crisis deepens. You have 4 minutes, 30 seconds. Hit it.
All right. This is now a breakdown crisis of the dollar system, of the entire world economy is another way of saying it. The problem that you have is derivatives, a mass of kited, bankrupt derivatives in the main money center banks of the world. But this is concentrated in London and in Wall Street in particular. We're estimating that the amount of derivatives in the world, especially over-the-counter, collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, is in excess of $1.5 quadrillion. Now, recently have come to light the statistics about the turnover, in other words, the buying and selling of these derivatives, which has now reached $4 quadrillion per year. So $4,000 trillion of buying and selling derivatives. This mass of kited derivatives represents a black hole. In other words, there's not enough liquidity in the world. There never could be enough money to satisfy the demands of $4 quadrillion of trading derivatives. So all of this stuff, QE1, QE2, QE3, we've had $1 trillion from the Treasury, $3.3 trillion from the Fed, a credit line of $24 trillion. None of this is enough, but what it does do is pushes the system towards hyperinflation. And that seems to be where we're headed right now. However, there's now the other thing on the horizon, which is the default. And this is now political. This is a political cabal that wants to institute, in effect, the bankruptcy or default of the United States. Let's look and see what would happen if the United States defaults. The secret is that the economic life of this planet depends to a large degree on the government of the United States and on national governments around the world. But that it works through a system of private central banks, privately owned central banks like the Fed, and zombie banks, bankrupt institutions, hedge fund hyenas, and so on. If you have a default by the U.S. Treasury, which has never occurred in world history, that will truly be the end of the world from a number of points of view. For this system, it will mean, for example, that Treasury bills, Treasury bonds, Treasury notes will all go down in price. The existing ones go down in price, and the interest rates will go up. And that will mean that every central bank in the world, every one of these private central banks, will find that its reserves held in Treasury bills, Treasury bonds, will be devalued. So every central bank will be in big trouble. Some of them will default. We have to think about the possibility of panic runs on the Bank of England, panic runs on the Federal Reserve, panic runs on the Bank for International Settlements, and the International Monetary Fund. Panic run can be any bank, right? If you have, for example, members of the IMF or the BIS, they put in money, they get shares, they get voting rights. Suppose those entities are going bankrupt and they turn around and say, no, we want our money now, give us our cash, because we're facing absolute bankruptcy. The other thing that it will do is simply to collapse credit markets all around the world. In other words, if you do this, though, you better have an alternative system, because what you're going to wake up to is not the singing tomorrows of a free market paradise. You're going to wake up to mass chaos and the threat of depopulation. In other words, hundreds of millions of deaths possible, maybe even more. The only alternative to that is if you say, look, zombie banks don't provide credit. Look at J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank. They absorb resources, but they don't provide credit for business. If the private sector zombie banks are incapable and the private central banks are also incapable, what's the other alternative? The free market won't do it because the free market
30 seconds.
The zombie banks. The only alternative is national banking. In other words, nationalize the Federal Reserve and say, we're going to maintain the regional banking system of the United States with 0% federal credit. However, not for banks, not for credit cards, but for production.
And that'll restart the economy.
That will keep you.
All right.
That's your passport to survival.
All right, Webster.
0% federal credit from a nationalized Federal Reserve.
All right, we're out of time. Bob Bowman will be at China Emperor Restaurant, 111 West William Cannon tonight. That's where he is for Truth Seekers. God bless you all. Retransmission starts now. Infowars.com.